it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
I never want to see Josh go out, but again, to have Mitch, a veteran quarterback, come in, didn't blink, and the huddle didn't blink, their belief in him is extremely high. I mean, he came in and delivered, he executed, right, the way he's supposed to, and that takes him being ready to go, being prepared through the week. All these players, they're one snap away. We had some guys help us out on defense today that stepped up and knew their role, embraced the role, and got themselves ready to go. So the preparation piece, I guess is what I'm saying, is the key.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott, Mitch Trubisky went in and laced a pass to Josh Palmer. Bills win 30-10. It's a victory Monday. Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Buffalo Bills Football Monday. Wide open phone lines. The seas have parted. And if you want to jump in with a thought and throw it our way, 803-0550 is the phone number. We'd be happy to have you as the Bills move to 2-0 and are really in a nice spot set up to... Well, the other teams that are 2-0 are teams they don't play, right? Yep. The Chargers can go there tonight, so can the Raiders. They don't play either of those teams.
Correct.
And also 2-0, the Colts.
Who they don't play.
So the race for the one seed is on with the Colts and the Chargers and the Raiders.
Maybe. Yeah.
The Chiefs at 0-2 is under the category of you love to see it.
Yep.
Very excited about that. And
I do think they're you could easily say, like, okay, dominant defensive performance yesterday. That's the Jets. That's Justin Fields. You're not going to see them in the most important games of the year later on. You could definitely say that. But their one seed chase, that defensive performance is important, I think, to their one seed chase. Mm-hmm. Because their one seed chase is playing those teams and not misstepping when you play the Steelers in December, or when you play the Browns later in the year. You'll play these mid to bad teams all across the year, and if you're going to stay above Baltimore, who you have basically a two-game lead on right now, I do think that defensive performance yesterday is important. Because if that's how they're going to be on defense, when they're playing mid to bad quarterbacks...
Yeah, you're Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, that's better than they were last year.
Yeah,
on defense, they were a team that could get beat by a lot of guys. And if they're gonna trounce everybody but the elite guys in the regular season, well, then I guess at the moment, what's the next elite offense they play? What's the next elite quarterback they play?
Mahomes,
and that doesn't look amazing through two games.
Not at all.
So I'm thinking that could be how their defense looks all year.
Well, trying to figure out
in the regular season.
We mentioned earlier in the show, if the New York Times playoff machine existed right now, or any one of these ones where you can punch it in and see the probabilities, we might see some good numbers here. And this is the best I've got for you. So I've got DraftKings live win totals.
Okay.
Like what are the win totals you bet over or under right now? The Bills number is 13.5.
Okay.
The Ravens are 11.5.
Two-game difference plus the tiebreaker.
Two-game difference, and the Bills have...
It's like a three-game difference.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Baltimore. Who's the next team you want to know?
I think the next team I want to know is right now. Isn't it the Chargers?
10.5. Even money, 10.5. That's three games back on what the markets would say this team's ranges.
Yeah.
The Bengals. I don't know if you thought that, you know, the Bengals are 2-0, but they've lost Joe Burrow. Here are the Bengals' next four games with a backup quarterback, and again, that defense is still not very good.
Yep.
They play the Vikings, who they might beat because J.J. McCarthy stinks.
Yep.
They play the Vikings, but their defense is great. They play the Broncos in Denver. Both of those are on the road. Then they play the Lions and the Packers. And then Steelers and Jets. And later in the season, the Bengals have a stretch of games in 3 weeks. This is right around when Burrow might come back, if he can come back. Ravens, Bills, Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Three straight games for Cincinnati. Ravens, Bills, Ravens. Welcome back, Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
If he comes back then.
Man, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but
we're doing it.
I'm really thinking like in a month, the Bills are gonna have like a cruise control lead, maybe on the one seed. Here are the next five games for the Bills and the Ravens. For the Bills, it's Miami, New Orleans, New England, Atlanta, and Carolina. That's your next five games.
You would say
that is as easy as it gets.
Right. 4-1 at worst. You would say 4-1 at worst, reasonably predicting how these games would go. Could it go worse?
Like,
sure.
One team in there that might be good. Atlanta.
Atlanta.
And we saw them last night.
I think Atlanta might have some teeth.
Yeah. They might be pretty good. The quarterback is like, okay, that's fine, but that's a pretty good football team.
But Carolina's not it.
No.
And the other games are at home.
Carolina, like man. I got something on that game later. What a joke that last drive was for them. And New England beat Miami, but they haven't looked impressive through two games. And then it's right, Spencer Rattler in Miami. Here's Baltimore's next five games. So again, like a month from now, roughly. Baltimore's next five games. They play the Lions on Monday Night Football. Mm. And they'll be favored, but Detroit just scored 52 points. Then they play the Chiefs in Kansas City. Then they play the Texans, and then they play the Rams.
The Bills don't play four games that tough the rest of the year.
No. Right, and they play maybe one good team in the next 5 weeks, and Baltimore plays five good teams in the next 5 weeks.
Yeah. 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. Get you the Skyworks stats of the game in just one moment. Abe in Alabama is up. Abe, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Just wanted to say that my dad was a huge Bills fan. I am. My son, my grandson. It's been four generations now, and my health is failing, and I'm just hoping and praying that this is going to be the year we need that Super Bowl win.
I hope so, too, Abe.
Thanks, Abe.
We think about it a lot, that Super Bowl win. San Francisco for the Super Bowl this year.
I mean,
I'm just thinking about the AFC Championship game at home. I think about that a lot.
Yep.
I think about that a lot.
And if they're the one seed and they have that right because they've earned it and they have 14 wins and maybe Kansas City doesn't win the division. I mean, although do we want Kansas City? I'll wait for December for this. I was going to say, we want them to not win the division because then you might play them in the second round. That's getting too far ahead of yourself, I think. No, you don't want Kansas City to win the division. You want the Chargers to bury them, right?
Sure.
This is a training camp question we had. Do you want the Chargers to look awesome throughout the year with Justin Herbert and win the division, or do you not want another great team in there? Because at the moment, I'm feeling inclined to just say, let them be great. Let them be great. Put Kansas City on the road to start the postseason and have somebody else win that division finally.
Tonight's a big game for the Chargers and Raiders. Like, one of these teams going 2-0, and if it's the Chargers, they're 2-0 in the division.
Right. I think I'm rooting for the Chargers because the Raiders no one would take seriously to win, right?
I think
even if they started 2-0.
Right. And this is something we've talked about before. I think the Chargers, I know their franchise reputation, but I think Jim Harbaugh is a heck of a coach. Their quarterback is pretty good. They've got some good weapons. Like that's a team that to me could put it together and be a true contender this year. They really could. Even though their season last year ended very stupidly.
Really stupid.
I think they could be a contender. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. What'd you have on the Panthers game, the end of their game?
Did you see what happened in that game?
I know they were down big and they came back.
They were down big. They got a garbage time touchdown. I guess they were down two scores. It was 2 minutes to go. They get the onside kick. It hits a Cardinal linebacker in the shoulder. It bounces right to a Panther. So they've got a final drive. Like, Bryce Young. All right, here you go. You got Tet McMillan, who's got 100 yards on the game. And that quarterback had, I think, 8-9 plays because of penalties. They were moving the ball because of penalties. There was, like, a roughing the passer. There was defensive holding. There was a pass interference. They had moved the ball, like, 25 yards down the field. He hadn't completed a pass yet. And then, like, they get these four downs on first and five after an offside. He's just totally incapable. Like, he's right back to, you can't have that dude on the field. Like, he can't extend plays at all. The Cardinals were, like, any pressure in his face, and he couldn't do anything. Like, I watched the end of that game, and I'm like, if I'm a Panthers fan, that 5 minutes is, like, I'm done with that quarterback.
Yeah, Bryce Young had a good finish to the year last year.
He did, yeah.
There was a number, I can see if I can find this. There's a stat on Xavier Leggett yesterday. Here you go. Xavier Leggett had 8 targets yesterday.
Yeah.
And ended with -2 receiving yards, which is the first time that's ever happened.
Wow.
He's the first player in NFL history, wide receiver tight end, to have 8 or more targets in a game that still finished with negative receiving yards.
Yeah.
So, like, the Panthers passing game.
Like, numbers-wise, at the end, it actually looks fine. Like, 328 yards and 3 touchdowns. But I'm telling you, that was terrible. All stacked by garbage time. Like, when they got a lucky chance to tie the game at the end, that quarterback could not do anything.
Makes the handoff, rolling to his left is Fields. Has time. Pressure coming from Epinesa. Now going to tuck it and run. And he's decked from behind. Ball is out. And the Bills have the football for the second straight week. Joey Bosa forces a fumble. And this time, the Bills are all over it. Fields back to pass. And he's sacked. Joey Bosa forces another fumble. The Jets hop on the football. But Joey Bosa has made his presence felt today. Back-to-back plays, getting hits on Fields, and his second forced fumble of the game. Back to pass on 2nd and 15. Nowhere to go, pressure coming, and Sanders misses him on the wrap-up, but the follow drags him down. Zion Logue, welcome up from the practice squad. He's got the sack.
Chris Brown on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. On just 3 of the many terrific plays by the Buffalo Bills defense yesterday in a 30-10 victory over the New York Jets. Welcome in. It is a Monday reaction, Victory Monday, Extra Point Show here on WGR Sports Radio 550. What's going on, everybody? We're on the YouTube stream on Mondays. That's right. So if you tuned off because YouTube, we do that on the morning show. We do it in the afternoon show. You're like, yeah, 10 to 12, no YouTube. Monday. We are here every Monday on the YouTube stream, so check us out, WGR 550 on YouTube. Sal Capaccio here, and you can get in the bullpen. You can chat along there, high bullpen, and you can call. And that's what we do here on a Monday Victory Monday Extra Point Show. Call up at 803-0550. That is the number here, as always, to take your phone calls. And what we do every Monday is take your calls, your comments, your questions on the Buffalo Bills game. So no interviews, no guests, just you and me, as always. That's what we always do on a Monday, and we're going to keep it rolling today because why not, right? The Bills with a big victory over the New York Jets. I've been asked several times since last night. Got home pretty quick last night, flying the team charter. You get back, and it was even before Sunday Night Football kicked off. So Matt Bove and I did a Always Game Day in Buffalo. Check that out. You can see it over at the South Sports YouTube page and, of course, download it. But the point is, Matt and I were talking, and he asked me, and people in the chat box asked me. I got here this morning. People asked me, what was yesterday like? And it's just kind of interesting to put into words because it's never boring. It's great, to be on an NFL sideline. But it was, to me, like just a business-like, workman-like type of win. And if you want to say, well, that can be a bit boring compared to what you had last week against the Ravens, that's fine with me, and the Bills will take boring. If you win 30-10 every week and you're up 27 points until the fourth quarter, right? I mean, 30-10, complete domination, by the way, for the Bills in this one along the way. Now, the offensive numbers weren't spectacular, but they were really good, especially on the ground. And I guess I say that because Josh Allen's numbers weren't spectacular. But actually, now that I think about it and look at it, let me grab the official game book here with the numbers. I mean, the Bills did run for 224 yards. So, yeah, they were really good. And, of course, but they did have 2 40-plus yard touchdown runs, which help out. But overall, Bills' overall offense here, 403 yards to the Jets' 154. I mean, that was complete domination. And it really started, though, even though I just brought up the offense, it really started with the defense. Because the defense had to atone for last week. They could not let what happened last week happen again. and you knew going in, the talk all week was the Jets are going to try to run the ball, the Jets are going to hand to Breece Hall, the Jets are going to use Justin Fields, they're going to do the same schemes the Bills, the Ravens did against the Bills last week. And the Jets couldn't do that. The Bills were ready for it. Now, no one's going to mistake Justin Fields with Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry for Breece Hall. They're both good. They're all good in their own right. So, I don't know, you know, I don't know exactly like what was said inside the walls of One Bills Drive, but we know this. Sean McDermott told us in the media last week, this week needs to be hard, because he told his team that. This week needs to be hard. And they went full padded practice on Wednesday. And then Ed Oliver gets hurt, stepped on. And then Taron Johnson's out. And you're like, whew, this could be a real day for the run defense again. Yeah, it was a day all right. It was a day the other way. It was a day that the run defense really stepped up. And honestly, like until the fourth quarter, you know what? I'm going to look right now. Let me see. The Jets had a total of 100 yards rushing. In the fourth quarter, they had, 30. Okay, 30 in the fourth quarter. I'm sorry, 37. Looks like 37 yards, if I'm looking at this column correctly. 30. 30 yards in the fourth, it was 37 passing. 30 yards rushing in the fourth quarter alone for the Jets. So going into the fourth quarter, the Bills held the Jets to 70 yards rushing for the game. What a turnaround from last week when they allowed 235. They held Breece Hall to 2.9 yards a carry after he was really explosive and good last week against the Steelers. The Bills were just dominant in this game, really, on defense. And you had to see it, and you needed to see it. And I hope it gives people more confidence, but we'll see. We're going to turn to the phone lines and hear from you at 803-0550. What did you think of the performance? Are you feeling better about it? Are you more confident? You could also say, it's the Jets. Well, that's true. The Jets haven't been much, right? I'll also remind everybody, the Jets played a Pittsburgh Steelers defense last week, scored 32 points, ran the ball really well, and they are an NFL football team. You can only play the teams on your schedule. I don't care who you play. They had to be better. They had to fix what happened last week against the Ravens, and they certainly did that for one game at least. So we'll take your phone calls on it here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on a Buffalo Football Monday. And of course, that means on a Monday, it is the Catholic Health Extra Point Show as well, presented by Catholic Health on a Buffalo Football Monday, the right way to care. And brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. And by Northtown Hyundai, Western New York's premier Hyundai dealership. Shop online at northtownhyundai.com. We will take a lot of your phone calls today as we go along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on a Buffalo Football Monday. It is a Victory Monday, and Jimmy in Buffalo starts us off first. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hey, guys. How are you? Happy Monday. Victory Monday. I thought we played great. Our defense looked dominant without Ed Oliver in. I'm glad we picked up Joey Bosa, and I'm glad we paid James Cook as well on offense. But my question to you guys is, who do you think will be the dominant wide receiver one halfway through the year?
I don't know if you have to have a dominant wide receiver one. I think the Bills would say nobody. I don't know. How do you define that, Jimmy? I guess is the question, right? Are you talking about guy who just has the most targets, has the most yards? Because I don't think the Bills – yesterday was exactly what the Bills wanted, and which is everybody eats, basically, right? Which is, hey, we don't have one guy. We have a bunch of guys, and we'll just throw to all of them. And so I don't think – if anybody's looking for that, I just think you'll be searching all year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I thought before the season, I thought it might have been Shakir would be our dominant guy, but he only got, what, one or two receptions?
That's right, and that's exactly what the Bills don't care. As long as everybody can contribute and win, that is exactly what their philosophy is. Look, if you want to – this isn't, like, condescending to Jimmy in any way, and he's asking a valid question, but I'm just going to say this in a general sense for everybody, all right? Stop looking at the Bills like a fantasy football team. It's not what they're playing. Okay, and I don't mean to parrot and say like when Brandon Bean came on here and Jeremy and Joe, that's not the point I'm making, okay? The point I'm making is the Bills have a whole bunch of receivers that they are confident in throwing to, and that includes their tight ends and running backs. Their tight ends yesterday, Dalton Kincaid, 4 for 37. Dawson Knox, 2 for 19. Jackson Hawes, 1 for 5. 7 catches. Okay. Josh Palmer led in yards, but only had 2 catches along the way. Keon Coleman, 3 catches. Multiple catches by Josh Palmer, Dalton Kincaid, Keon Coleman, Dawson Knox. Then a catch each by Elijah Moore, who also ran the ball, by the way. Khalil Shakir, Jackson Hawes, and James Cook. They also threw the ball twice to Tyrell Shavers and once to Ty Johnson. You can't look at this team and think you got to have a dominant number one. Yeah, that'd be great. If suddenly we're sitting there halfway through the year and Keon Coleman has 500 yards receiving, great. But that's not how they don't care about that. Let's go to Billy in Toronto. Hi, Billy. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Yeah, and you're bang on about that. I mean, like, you know, we got a baseball team up here in Toronto that's doing the same thing. It's
why you got to bring that up to me? Why you got to bring that up to me today? Come on now. No, you're right. They're impressive. They are very impressive, and they get contributions from everybody. You're right, Billy.
That's exactly what I'm trying to get at. I mean, you know, I think we're putting too much emphasis, oh, well, Baltimore ran all over us. Baltimore is going to run all over everybody. I don't think you can count that game. And I know, Sal, I'm looking too far in the future, but it looks like to me that game last week was the most important game. I think it's going to be between us and Baltimore. I've said for a long time, I think Kansas City's run is over. And, you know, I just love the way the defense played yesterday. The offense wasn't that great, but we ran the ball on them. I mean, the Jets do have a good defense. That's about all they got. And I just thought it was a great win. I'm just worried, really worried, Sal. And I know it won't happen, but I mean, I'm going to nitpick here. But I'm worried about us getting complacent. I mean, there is nobody in our division to challenge us. And, you know, it's just a matter of staying focused and getting through the season healthy.
Let me ask you a question, though, Billy. Let me ask you a question, okay? Where would that worry come from based on the last 5 years? They've had control of this division. When have they ever been complacent in that time period? In fact, they've always played their best football at the end of the year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But I think this year is even worse. I just think the teams in this division are
brutal. But you have nothing to base that on based on how they perform. The one thing I've always said about Sean McDermott teams is, and it's true, they're just consistent. I just think it's just something you make up in your mind, Billy. It's not nothing you've ever seen them actually have and do, and even though they've had times like that where they could be before.
Yeah, no doubt, Sal. I just worry about that you know, that one bad game that we have against the
And that has happened for sure. Yeah, that has happened.
All I want, Sal, is I want that home and field advantage, and I want snow in the playoffs. If there's anything that can shut down Baltimore's running game, is bad weather. That's what we want against them. Make Lamar throw the football. I can only see it, Baltimore and us, to go to the Super Bowl. That's
you know what else could stop the Ravens' rushing attack? Apparently the Cleveland Browns, because the Ravens did not run the ball well yesterday. They had Derrick Henry at 11 carries for 23 yards. How did the Browns shut down the Ravens' running game? Wow. 11 carries for 23 yards. The Ravens yesterday ran for 45 yards, folks. I mean, that's just what a juxtaposition from last week. And they still scored 41 because Lamar threw for 4 touchdowns. I mean, Billy's calling up saying, make Lamar a passer. Dude is a great passer still, though. I get it. Like, I understand the point. But, man, here's the Bills and Ravens who the Bills score 30 without Josh Allen contributing a single point, meaning no touchdown passes or runs. Here's the Ravens scoring 41 without Derrick Henry contributing a single point. Wild, right? That shows you how good both are. JD in Hamburg. What's up, JD?
Hey, good morning, Sal. I want to say something about the snap count yesterday, and then I want to follow up with something about James Cook. But first off, I'm such a geek that after the game, I went and looked at every single play. And up until the point it was 30-3, the Bills were Allen was under center, or Trubisky was under center 35 times and in the shotgun 28 times. Now, I think that's pretty significant in terms of a change. Now, I know it's a blowout. Maybe you want to run more. I don't know. But I thought that was really interesting that they were putting him under center much more. What did you think of that? And then I want to follow up about that.
I would have to look. It's a great observation by you. I'd have to go and look at compared to other games and game script, right? I mean, because early on he was in the shotgun. The game starts to get, you know, in the Bills' favor. It's slanted. They put him under center a little bit more. I've always felt that Josh Allen is excellent under center with play action, and because you can really hold, because the Bills can run the ball well. Let's go back to last year now. Also, JD, do you remember last year in New York, the Bills went there, there's no James Cook, and they just ran the ball down the Jets' throat. And yeah. I think they had a bit of that mentality here as well. And it didn't, they didn't like, I mean, they still ran the ball very well, a couple big runs there. But I'd have to go and kind of look at how, let's see where it goes from here, right? I mean, it could be just, it's just one game, but I've always liked the Bills and having Josh Allen under center.
Yeah, indeed. And I'll tell you what, I'll finish with this, then I'll hang up. I notice also that James Cook's percentage of the carries by running backs is going up in the first two games. Obviously, he got the big money deal. But I really want to see Cook carry the ball a lot more, and I'm glad they're doing this. The other thing, and I'll hang up and listen, is I'm a big believer that when John Elway did not win a Super Bowl until Terrell Davis came along, Dan Marino never won one because they never had a running game. And I believe firmly that the Bills will win a Super Bowl when James Cook is given the ball a lot and is as impactful or almost as impactful as Josh Allen. I think when they run the ball really effectively and Allen doesn't have to throw that much, the Buffalo Bills will absolutely win a title. Have all a great day.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, they can certainly run the ball. They did yesterday for sure. Over 200 yards rushing for the Buffalo Bills. James Cook himself, 132 yards rushing, 6.3 yards a carry, and two scores. Excuse me. Let's go to Dave in Buffalo. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Sal. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good, great. I wanted to say that I think Sean McDermott has been under way too much pressure. I think it was crazy that people were saying he was on the hot seat. I think he's proven his defense came through in the big game. His clock management was great in the big game. They pulled that one out against probably the next best team in the league from what I looked at so far. And then they just devastate. They dominated. This was a preseason game, and that was because of his coaching and how the players played. And I just want to say real quick, I want to congratulate you on winning the Sports Professional and the Best Use of Social Media at the Buffalo Broadcasters Association last week. And I also want to recognize your two producers there, Joe Calley, who was nominated for the Rising Star Award and won the Rising Star Media Award last year, and Dan Dale, who won the Rising Star Media Award this year. So you guys are just like the Bills. You got it all going on. So
yeah.
I'll hang up and I'll wait for your comment.
You got it, Dave. And Dan is here today as well. Joe is producing today. Joe Calley producing the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on a Buffalo Football Victory Monday. And thank you very much. Very special honor to be awarded the basically the Sportscaster of the Year, the Sports Professional of the Year, and truly amazing night. And I really appreciate that. Now, I have to be honest with you, Dave. I don't know who was actually saying Sean McDermott was on the hot seat other than, I mean, I don't know. I mean, nobody credible. There's fans that call up and say he should be. There's fans that call up and say they should have made a change by now. No one that I know that's credible has ever said Sean McDermott's actually on the hot seat. I've always maintained the same position. I can't believe right now that the owner of this team would want to make a change, but certainly anything could happen depending on how the year finishes out. So I don't see that. I also agree with you that he coached a really, really good end of half and end of game last week against the Ravens. And of course, to come right back and fix the problems that ailed them last week, that's a sign of a good coaching staff. It's not just Sean McDermott. It's a staff to be able to pick those pieces up, get back to where they were with guys filling in, Zion Logue from the practice squad, Cam Lewis at nickel corner, right? I mean, you have to give credit to the coaching staff for sure. So for all the people out there who constantly want to say coaching, coaching, coaching when something doesn't go wrong, you should also recognize when things go right. And last week, they got run on badly. When they got back into the lab, they made adjustments, and they came out and they did what good coaching staffs are supposed to do, which is fix those problems and contribute to a big win. John is up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Hi, John.
Hey, Sal. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, good. So, Sal, really quick to what I was talking about was when he, I think the Bills played a great game overall, and I think that ultimately that we're doing better than we've done in a long time, just correcting the mistakes. But, you know, the caller was talking about Sean McDermott and why fans always say, like, we need to get rid of him.
one of the things that's been irking me since yesterday was calling timeout right before the half and allowing them to keep all their timeouts and then get the ball back with the timeouts that they had. Well, what should have happened, they should have let them call timeout. Instead, we call timeout, which I still have no idea. I'm trying to get your insight on why.
Let me go back and look at it. It sounds like a very, very, very nitpicky thing that you're just looking for.
No. It's out. Listen, like I said,
I have to go back and look. Wait. The end of the first half? Let me look at it. Hold on. Let me look at it. Okay. So second quarter, right? Let's go to the end of the first half. Bills. Hold on one second. Hold on. I got it in front of me, John. Hold on. Let me do this real quick. All right. The Jets. Are you talking about when the Jets had the ball or the Bills so I can find it?
So, no. The Bills had the ball. We were trying to run. We should have run the clock all the way down before the half because if we don't go there and we don't get down the field, then we're leaving them with a lot of time to get the ball back and run back down the field with their timeouts. But instead, we call timeout instead of them calling timeout. And we left them with like an extra timeout plus extra time on the right before the half for them to get the ball back.
There was one timeout called by the Bills in that situation with the ball.
Yes, and it was right before they went three and out.
I got 2 minute warning. Bills 3rd and 9, shotgun, Kincaid catches it. They're at the Jets 44. Allen then was sacked for negative yards. Then Allen threw to Coleman for 7 yards, and they called a timeout right before 3rd down.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know why they called timeout. It could have been because maybe there was something going on with, you know, getting set. I don't remember. Now I'm trying to remember the exact sequence. I don't know. Like I said, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal to me. I think they were trying to, they were just trying to get set again with 1:03 left in the half. They called it. I don't know. Okay. I guess. Okay. Fine. If that's your complaint, if that's your only complaint about yesterday, I think that means they coached a really good game.
No. And so, like I said, I just wanted to say, like, if why people constantly say the things they do, which is, I'm not saying that I agree. I'm just saying that why they do that is because we have a tendency, Sean McDermott, to do things that sometimes is a little head-scratching. But, I mean, if that's the only complaint that we're going to have on a Monday, I mean, okay, that's a pretty damn good day, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why exactly they called timeout. I have to look at it. There's a lot of reasons why a team could call timeout.
I will tell you, though, Sal, it was definitely head-scratching.
They could also, how about this? You know, I'll tell you a point Eric Wood brought up. He brought up the fact that, you know, what if maybe this is before they got the ball, before the timeout. He said maybe the Bills want to score twice.
No. And so here's the thing, though. It was 3rd down. And if they don't get that 3rd down, we're leaving them with a lot of time plus another timeout, which is why I was like, what are they calling timeout for?
Maybe they wanted the right 3rd down play. Maybe they wanted the right 3rd down play, and they actually did. They got it, and they converted.
Yeah, but I will tell you this, Sal. They didn't get it. And then also now the Jets have another timeout to go down the field.
All right, John. I got it. Okay, I got it. I think it's just such a frivolous thing to complain about right now, to be quite honest with you. But okay, if that's what people want to complain about because of a timeout at the end of the half when you're up by 2 scores with 1 minute left, 1 timeout you use, you burn, go right ahead. I just think it's frivolous. Let's go to Will and Clarence. Hi, Will.
Hey, Sal. How you doing, man?
Good. Thank you.
Great game. I just love where we're at. I was watching Joe Ferguson and Joe Cribbs. So I love Bosa. My complaint is, it drives me nuts. Why are we running Josh Allen, the best player in the NFL, at like a fullback up the middle? I love McDermott. I love what we have too. Don't get me wrong. Why are they running this guy on an ISO up the middle when we're up 10 or 13 to nothing? And we know you saw from the beginning we had this game in hand. You saw from the beginning, hey, we're looking really good. We're controlling the line. Why are we running this guy like a fullback?
Well, are you talking about the play he got hurt?
Yeah.
He said after the game that was his choice.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's got an option there. He should have handed it off. He said after the game, I should have given the ball, but I didn't. So he took it up. It's an option play. And here's the reason why you run that play is because it works and you have Josh Allen. It's the same thing Lamar Jackson or Justin Fields or other running quarterbacks. But Josh Allen has an option there. He can either hand it to the running back, depending on what he sees, or he can pull it and he can get yards. And nobody wants to see Josh Allen taking shots, there's no doubt. But he made the decision there to take the ball.
Yeah, and that's my point is that shouldn't happen anymore. That should happen a lot less.
Okay, well then if you want to do that, then you're effectively taking away something that makes the Bills' offense very, very good.
I hear you, and when they need to do it, I get it. I get it when they need to do it, and I get that. But I'm just saying, it's you're rolling the dice. I feel every time. That's just
but again, he's rolling the dice himself too. And if you want, listen. If you the only answer here, Will, is take it completely out of the playbook. Okay, that's fine. Then you're really taking away something that makes the Bills' offense great. Correct?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you got to give Josh Allen the option and what he's going to do there. That's the whole point of the play.
I get that, but my point is.
No, you want your point is you want to blame the coaches for calling a play where Josh Allen runs the ball, and I'm telling you the play is not Josh Allen necessarily runs the ball. It's get the option, and if there's an opening, you take it. If not, you hand it. And he said after the game on that particular play that he should have handed it.
Yeah.
So, gotcha. All right. Yeah, well, I hope that helps. 803-0550 is the number to call. Hey, this is what we do on a Monday. Bills win 30-10, and we still got people who want to call up and complain about one timeout used at the end of the half, or Josh Allen not handing the ball off and taking it himself. And yes, he did get hurt on the play, but of course he's okay. He had his nose busted up a little bit.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Well, it wasn't the nail biter that week one was, and I was okay with it, Steve.
Not me. It's boring. Come on.
Jeff, dude, I'll take boring every single week if it looks like that.
A little drama.
Give me boring with a capital B. I'm totally fine with it.
The biggest drama I had, I was sure Josh was going to pull a hamstring snapping off a 40-yard run.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, man, he's going to – that's
– apologize for my miscalculation.
That's like a track at – he looked like a gazelle, like he's going to pull something.
Now, will you be quiet with that?
Then
why are you even putting that out into the ether?
I was, when he came off the field, I'm sure I was everybody, man, I was like, oh my gosh, what could possibly have happened to him when he came off with his nose?
Yeah. And he was gushing blood.
We couldn't see that really on the broadcast. Yeah. And
it was a gusher.
Yeah, so I was like, what is going on? And then
for those that didn't know, he got his mask pulled on the tackle, and the brow of his chin strap slipped, so the brow of his helmet came straight down onto his nose.
Yeah,
so it slid forward, like right on his nose.
You can see it right here on the replay. He kind of got pushed into Osiris Torrance's legs and pushed it down, and then the Jet defender put his tried to wrap him up and slapped his thumb and forearm bone across the bridge of his nose and put it even further down. I'll say this, not that I want to make light of the injury or whatever, I have to say, a lot of guys have said it too in the post game. Mitch Trubisky walking in cold and throwing an absolute pill.
32-yarder.
That was unbelievable.
With no warm-ups.
He just walked on. It was like a – Sean right.
And
McDermott
said it. I'm not faulting Josh for this at all because he got cracked on his nose.
He did.
And having broken my nose myself, it is not fun.
Oh, it hurts.
Like, it's a bell ringer for sure. And he saw it was bleeding, so he came off the field immediately. Eric Wood on the broadcast, who is a center and would know this, said, usually when a quarterback or a center is injured, you take a knee on the field. So the athletic training staff comes out to tend to you. And while that's happening, the backup quarterback and the center can get some practice reps. He can get some throws before the next play.
This just in. None of that was going on.
No, that did not happen.
McDermott said it, and it was true. It was like a hockey line. You're out, I'm on. Let's go.
Yeah.
That was it.
Hockey change, yeah.
You're right. I've never seen anything like that.
Because usually players are told, if you're hurt, take a knee.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was gushing blood. He had to get it taken care of.
Stellar performance by Mitch Trubisky for that. Just a little takeover for one play, and what a job. That I don't want to read too much into it, but man, oh man, that's an unbelievable. And we always talk about the culture. Man, haven't got. Let's go. They just shifted gears. Let's go. And he goes in and they calls the play. Let's go. That I can't tell you how disconcerting that would be for a bad football team.
Yeah.
And these guys didn't even blink.
We could tell even up in the booth because the Bills sideline is right under us in the broadcast booth. So we could tell they were tending to his face. So we suspected it was a bloody nose or something like that, or maybe he got poked in the eye. We were thinking maybe a scratched cornea.
Yeah, that's
like
what
something
I was
like
thinking
that.
Too, yeah.
So that's what we were suspecting, not knowing what it was until, you know, we got the update from the sidelines. And he'll presumably get x-rays today to see if it's busted. He's probably gonna have a couple of raccoon eyes for this game on Thursday night. And I'm confident that the x-ray situation will go better than the one I had when I busted my nose as a teenager. My dad takes me to the doctor. I'm 16 years old. I take an elbow to the nose in basketball practice from a teammate of mine who thought he was Michael Jordan. He was going to jump over me while I'm taking a charge in the lane.
Right.
Drops his elbow straight down on my nose. And I'm like sliding the bone back and forth because he split it right in half. So I'm at the doctor. We're going to get x-rays. I go into radiology. And I can tell immediately, and I'm only 16, I can tell immediately this person doesn't know what they're doing. Because I'm assuming, I've never taken an x-ray before, I am assuming they're going to sit me in the chair, take a profile x-ray this way, and then maybe one straight on, and tell me if I have a broken nose.
Right.
They take me into the major x-ray exam room where they have the long table for full body x-rays that you lay down on?
Right.
I am not joking when I tell you this. The person first has me lay on the table with just my head. So now I'm like crouched down and I'm laying my head flat on the table like this so they could take an x-ray with an overhead machine. I am not lying to you when I tell you they had me kneel at the end of the table and rest my nose like this on the end of the exam table to take an x-ray from on top. And I'm sitting there as a 16-year-old, no medical training whatsoever, and I'm saying, these aren't going to show anything. Go out in the waiting room, wait for the x-rays to come back. Different person comes out. Guy looks at my dad and he goes, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Those x-rays did not show anything. It's that guy's first day. I'm going to take your son back. We're going to take a couple of profile shots just to confirm that it's broken. Dude, I'm in the exam room
with your nose
on the end of the table like this. I thought of it immediately when I saw Josh with his swollen nose. So he's getting better care than I got.
Yeah,
so that's good.
So that being said, that was that game yesterday. It was a slog fest in the second half. We'll have Eric Wood on later in the show to talk about, you know, what that – it's a boost for the Bills because they've got a game in 3 days. I don't know if you heard. And it's hard to get ready for that in 3 days. But having a laugher of a game, an easy game yesterday where you can run some guys through, you can sit some guys down in the second half.
That's huge. Rest
lighten the load. It goes a long way. I'll tell you this, veterans like Joey Bosa, all those guys, Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown, all the big dudes, Daquan, they're feeling way better today after that game because they took fewer, you know, they got some time to sit
less
down.
Less snaps, yeah.
Than they would normally feel. It does go a little ways towards Thursday's game.
Coach McDermott did say that Matt Milano got dinged up in the game, did not play much in the second half at all. We'll have to find out if he has more details on the location of said injury. He is scheduled to address the media at 3:30 this afternoon, so we'll see if there is an update on that. A bunch of other players, as Steve mentioned, got to rest late in that game. A lot of starters got to sit. Christian Benford left early. Tre'Davious White left early. Taylor Rapp left the game early. A lot of starters on defense and on the offensive line, with the except I think Spencer played right to the end. They replaced Osiris Torrance. They replaced Connor McGovern with Cedric Van Pran Granger. They replaced David Edwards at left guard with Alec Anderson, and they replaced left tackle Deion Dawkins with Ryan Vandermark late in that game. And a lot of the backups were in on offense as well. So it's good. You lighten the load. You got a short turnaround, so hopefully they'll be all the fresher on Thursday. So just to recap everything, Bills improved to 2-0 with the 20-point win. And how about week two and how kind that has been to the Bills? Bills have now won each of their last seven week two games, and they've won their last five week two games by a count of 175-37, with an average margin of victory of 27.6 points. 2021, won at Miami 35-0. 2022, won the Monday night opener against Tennessee 41-7. 2023, won against Las Vegas 38-10. 2024, won at Miami 31-10. And yesterday, won at the Jets 30-10. Holy cow, do they like playing on week two?
Well, I think it's a signal as to how good they can be when they're healthy. You know?
Right? And they weren't even 100% healthy. No Taron Johnson in this game.
No Ed. No Taron
Johnson.
No
Ed Oliver.
Right. So I think that's one thing about this that, I mean, because when you, think about it too, back in the day, he had Von Miller who was healthy at the the beginning of his, his run. So it's a little bit of a nod to that, but it's also a nod to getting one game under your belt and getting up to full speed and then let's turn it loose.
Yeah.
And the other team still doesn't know exactly what you're good at, and you do more.
Bills off to a 2-0 start for the fifth time in the McDermott era. They did it last year. They started 2-0. They're doing it again this year. Bills defense, who should get a tip of the cap, held the Jets to 78 total net yards in the first half. Jets had three and outs in the game and a one-play possession on the forced fumble by Joey Bosa that was recovered by A.J. Epinesa. Bosa had two forced fumbles in the game, a sack and a pair of quarterback hits. His last hit on Justin Fields forced him from the game, and Jets head coach Aaron Glenn confirmed this morning that Fields is in concussion protocol. Tyrod Taylor had to finish the game for the Jets at quarterback. James Cook, the catalyst on offense, as you saw in that game rewind, 132 rushing yards on 23 carries, pair of rushing touchdowns, including the 44-yarder. It's his fifth career 40-plus-yard touchdown run of his career since entering the league in 2022. His five 40-plus-yard touchdown runs lead the league. So all y'all who said don't sign the guy to an extension when I said he is a difference maker, he is the most dynamic athlete on offense next to Josh Allen, I told you so.
That would be me. I will say this, I did get talked out of that. The more I went back and started watching
you
games,
eventually
like,
came around to
you might be right. So before they signed him and before we ever heard that it was close or that he might even do it, I was like, yeah, you know what?
Steve
we might want to sign
his tune
him
a little bit.
I did change my tune. But in the beginning, I was like, don't do it. Come on.
Buffalo's
I was wrong.
Yeah, Buffalo's defense was stifling as they bounced back from last week's performance with a dominant showing against a Jets team that gained zero or negative yards on half of the snaps that Justin Fields played while still in the game. The Jets were 0 for 11 on third down, marking just the second time since 1991 that the Bills have not allowed a third down conversion to their opponent in a game. The other instance, also against the Jets in the 2023 opener, a game the Bills actually lost. The Jets had 10 possessions in the game, punted seven times, lost a fumble, and had a field goal and a garbage touchdown at the end of the game. Perhaps most importantly, as Steve mentioned, Bills were able to rest a lot of their starters come the fourth quarter, knowing it was going to be a short week, with the Dolphins coming to town on Thursday night.
Not just do you get guys that can rest. You know, Tre'Davious White took some time off. All these guys got sat. Benford sat down. It's also when, for instance, the Miami Dolphins are going to watch this game on film, there's going to be like 2.5 quarters where it's worthless.
Yeah, bad film to get an idea. And you heard Josh in the post-game interview with Tracy Wolfson. He said, we ran the same run play an awful lot.
Yeah.
Like, Brady kept a lot of stuff in the bag.
They didn't have to, but they didn't get any. There was no creativity. They got a lot. You know, they got Elijah Moore in the end zone. You know, but there was no razzle dazzle, no ball handling, none of this stuff. No pushing the ball down the field.
No, got to have a third down plays.
Right. The most impressive shot of the day was Trubisky throwing his one shot. You know, other than that, Josh wasn't. He threw it 25 times, but And literally, this game was kind of a slogfest early on. Josh was like 2 of 7 or something at one point. You know, got off to a really slow start, and so did, and as did Fields, although he never got out of it.
Yeah, because you can say that the Jets' pass rush was effective early in that game. Josh was getting heated up a lot and had to move out of the pocket, you know, rush some throws.
It worked better. The Jet front seems to be better in the pass rush than they are in the run front.
Which I don't think a lot of people were anticipating. I mean, you have two former first-round picks on the edges in Jermaine Johnson and Will McDonald, who are quality pass rushers. Johnson's coming back, you know, from a bad injury last year, and then he actually left the game with an ankle injury before it was over. That should be a good pass rush for the Jets going forward.
The problem is
they don't have an offense to get them ahead on the scoreboard.
Right.
So the pass rush can't get maximized because the other team can run the ball all day like the Bills did yesterday.
The Bills continue to be so efficient offensively. They score.
Yeah.
Field goal, touchdown. They go out, 3 and out by the Jet offense. Bills go down, boom, 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 boom. It's like a 10-play drive, touchdown. They come back out on the first play from scrimmage after the 3 and out. The Jets come out, and it's the Joey Bosa punch out. Bills got it. 3 or 4 or 5 plays, and they kick a field goal. Now they're down 10-0, and their offense has had 4 plays.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, they punted 7 times in the game, and the Bills just kept 3 points here, another 3 points, now a touchdown, now it's 20-0, and the Jets are like, well, you know, we use this word a lot. They just strangle teams in the second half.
They choke out the game.
Just not enough game left to get back in it with the Bills staying on the field offensively and then tacking on some points as well.
And I think the best part was the Jets crowd was never a part of the game.
Oof.
They never had a chance to get into the game and be a factor, you know, with noise or whatever. I'm showing Steve. On social media, you got Jets fans tweeting about how annoying it was that you could audibly hear the Bills fans in the seats saying, let's go Buffalo, let's go Buffalo.
My son and his wife live in Brooklyn. They were at the game with like 30 Bills fans.
Yeah, my daughter was at the game with her roommate.
Yeah. They weren't alone. You know, there was a lot of Bills fans there.
And by halftime.
At this current moment in history, the Jets are up against it, but they've got – you and I both have a lot of respect for Aaron Glenn, and if they stick with him and give, you know, and let him work his plan, they will get better.
It might not be this year,
but
though.
They have a long way to go.
Yeah, it might not be this year. He's pushing a boulder up a mountain.
Yes, he is, and I'll say this too: he's not getting much help from some of his lead players.
No, he's not. You showed it to me on tape.
The leaders of that team don't have the throttle all the way up.
For our MSG viewers, I want our guys in the control room to re-rack the James Cook 44-yard touchdown run, because in the background, top right corner, Steve pointed this out to me, Sauce Gardner's effort on James Cook's touchdown run. He's coming from the backside of this play. Watch him throw it into coast mode. If it zooms out, and it might not zoom out enough.
We're not going to see it. But
He's on the backside of that play on a wide-angle camera view. And he is coasting.
Yeah.
He's not running to the ball. So
it's just.
There he is. Jog away, Sauce.
There we go.
It's just
never a chance. Now I see he lets up at the end where he's got no chance to catch him, but.
You don't see Bills defenders doing
you
that.
That's how I think you have to evaluate how a coach is doing. In that game, the Jets. The Jets did not finish strong effort-wise. That's one of the things Sean McDermott brought to the Buffalo Bills, man. They weren't great, you know, they got to the playoffs in 17. 18 they did not, with Josh in his rookie year, and he didn't know what he was doing and the whole thing. But the team played hard all the time, even though they were losing some games. And then, of course, in 19, when Josh started to climb, you expected it.
Yeah.
But I think most coaches know, even if the guy's a great player, and you saw Sean McDermott do this early on as Cordy Glenn, some of these other guys, there are guys who aren't fully on board and who are in this spot in their mind where, you know, I'm going to let somebody else do that. and you have to move on from them. Yeah, good players.
If they don't have McDermott's number one prerequisite is you have to adopt the growth mindset that exists here. Well,
if you don't try, if you got to buy in.
If he doesn't believe you are committed to getting 1% better the next day and the day after that and the day after that, whether it's week 2 or week 18, whether the team is 10-2 or 2-10, if you're not trying to get better every day, you're just not going to be here very long. You're just not.
Yeah, that's what you see guys who just are like, listen, I'm gonna show up here. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to do my thing, but I am not buying in. I'm not here to help anybody else get better. I'm just in my
– I want to get my paycheck.
Right. You have to move on from those guys. Mm-hmm. Some very, very good players. And most coaches want to do that. But for financial reasons, contracts, dead cap money, it takes them a minute to do that. But as soon as they can, they do. Glenn, I'm sitting there thinking right now, he's looking down that roster going, okay, we're going to have to do something. Either that or you have to reach him somehow. You have to go in and reach that guy and say, listen, we need you. You got to do better than this. And we'll see how they respond.
I remember Coach McDermott in his first year here saying, we don't have all the right guys on the bus yet.
Yeah.
And Aaron Glenn is there right now. He doesn't have all the right guys on the bus yet.
That's right.
And he's got to work on that and figure who's staying on the bus and who's got to get moved off the bus.
And I'll say, I think Aaron Glenn gets that better than anybody because of what he did to the staff and the administration side. They wiped the whole building clean.
Yeah, and he also has previous coaching stops where he's been on teams that have had to go through that. He went through it with the Lions, who went like 4-13 his first year there with Dan Campbell. He did it in New Orleans, where they were 3-13 his first year there. So he knows what these rebuilding projects look like, and it might not be pretty for this entire first season. They may go 4-13. They may go 5-12, whatever it is.
Right.
It's probably going to be a long season.
Yes.
He knows that. Obviously. Whether his players can stomach it is another thing. And if they can't, they probably shouldn't be there.
That's right. We talk about it all the time. You've got to have guys that buy in because it's so hard to play the game for just yourself, you know. And if you've got guys doing that, it shows.
Yeah.
You just absolutely stink.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I don't think the Jets stink. They can't play as well as they did in opening weekend and stink. But that was not a good game. Now, they were up against it yesterday. They were against a good team who was highly motivated, who's got big things. And they've got a culture that's established. They've got tremendous player leadership. They've got continuity. They got everything going for them. And the Jets saw it. And they could not compete. And it was their attitude and their effort and all that stuff that was out of the game yesterday. It wasn't schemes or anything like that. Now, certainly, Justin Fields had some stuff. He's still got to develop, no question. But they shut it down too quick, I thought.
And that's why if you saw Aaron Glenn in his press conference after the game, he was seething, because he said, that is not what we're about here. We're about disciplined play. We're about effort from start to finish. And he knows he did not get that from that team yesterday, and it's week 2.
Yeah,
and week 2.
You think about what they went through yesterday. Early on, they kept the Bills' offense on the field with penalties.
Third and 19, roughing the passer.
No question, Josh flopped. But that's
– pull up. The ball's out of his hand.
That's what you do. Every good quarter, all the good ones do it. They've been doing that since you get away with it, since it meant something. They did it to themselves with penalties, undisciplined penalties and all that stuff, as much as the Bills did it to them. And then when that started to go, they just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And they started going through the motions, and then the game got away from them pretty quick. And also, the only reason that wasn't 50-0 was that the Bills are thinking about Thursday night.
Yeah. They were playing conservative because they could.
They could.
Because their defense was so stifling.
Their defense was stifling. They knew that they were being efficient enough offensively. Yep. They'll be fine. And they just got out of there as healthy as they could possibly get and walked away with a 20-point win. Yeah, I don't think the Jets – it's never as bad as it looks and never as good as it looks. And
that's
I'm sure,
long rebuilding process.
It is. It's going to take a minute. But it starts with attitude. And the Jets did not show that yesterday.
Yeah. A couple of other notes before we take a break here. The Bills have now not lost the turnover battle in 24 regular season and postseason games. It's the longest streak in the league since 1950, most consecutive games without losing the turnover battle. They were tied in the turnover battle a couple of times. I think the Rams game comes to mind. They were tied 1-1 in the turnover battle, but they have not lost the turnover battle. They have not been minus in a game in 24 straight. That is a record since 1950. They also are now 25-6 in AFC East games since 2020. That is the best in the entire league for a division mark over that span of time. Meanwhile, the Jets are the exact opposite, 6-25 over that span in the division. Bills have also now won 9 straight games in the AFC East in which Josh Allen has at least one pass attempt. We're throwing out the Week 18 throwaway game last year where he played one snap to keep his consecutive game streak alive and then exited. So not counting that game, they've won 9 straight now against the AFC East. So just a couple of notes to chew on there.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Football Monday on WGR brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. What's next is Miami. Make it interesting one of these years. Somebody. Can anybody just sort of show up to play against this team in the division, or is that just not going to ever happen? I mean, wow. Yesterday was like an NBA game where it's early in the season and I don't know who's good anymore, but I don't want to make the show sound so old. Just use like sort of the Lakers and Clippers realm of teams, but one team is just like way better, and you kind of know. Hockey isn't even like this. You kind of know sitting down to watch that game, if you're a fan of the lesser team, like you have almost no chance. Almost like wrestling. This I did not think of this game as that
before it happened. Feel that way going in because of the, you know, comparisons style-wise that, you know, the challenges that the Jets presented, at least that we thought they presented from a running the ball standpoint, a physicality standpoint. But yeah, they were just no match. I mean, the Bills just right from the start of this game dominated it. They needed some help from the Jets in the form of penalties to get their offense on track early, but it didn't matter because the Jets were not going to move the ball. They just could not do anything on offense in this game. It reminded me of the way the Patriots used to look when they'd come in here to play the Bills. Not all the time, but occasionally just sort of felt like, did they even try? Did they even use their best stuff? I mean, what do we do? The Bills just shut up and sort of, workmanlike, I don't know, workmanlike / dominant is what yesterday felt like. Punch in, get some points. They can't touch you. Punch out, go home.
I mentioned New England in that way yesterday, but I don't even remember many games like that here, at least, where you kind of, you're hoping that you can beat them. But it's just like not even close. This game yesterday, if I'm a Jets fan at this game, I'm ready to leave in an hour. Like it's just, I'm punting at 20-0, or no, the 51-yard field goal for 20-3. Mm-hmm. Then I'm punting on another similar kind of situation, and like my guys just don't want to be here. Like this isn't really sports. This isn't like we're trying to win. This is what
building a culture and all that stuff, like just
keep it close.
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of Bills games like that.
Mm-hmm.
But man, what a demoralizing result for New York yesterday to like not even belong on the same field. I mean, that doesn't happen. That hasn't happened between these two teams in New York in a long time. But it was That's like that yesterday. And to maybe compound it, you're hoping after last week that your quarterback might be something. You know, you've got a young, talented, athletic player, and he had a very good game against the Steelers, even though they lost. And then, like, not at all in this game, and he gets hurt. Just, I mean, an all-time bad day for the Jets. I mean, not to make it about them, but, you know, as far as the Bills go, we weren't sure about their defense. And I want to kind of still not be all the way sure.
Sure.
But it seemed possible that they could get gashed here by a team that plays similar to Baltimore. Like, I thought it was possible that would happen yesterday, and it was, you know, 180 degrees from
that. Yeah, that's why I don't go too hard at it, you know, Jets are going to Jets type of perspective here, because it's easy to default to that. But they did look like, I don't know, vastly different. They looked good last week is what they looked, especially, I think, on offense. I mean, they gave up, I think, 34 points to Pittsburgh in that loss, but they moved the ball. The quarterback looked more than competent, looked like maybe ready to take a step, but that's been Fields' career. Like he is a tease. He will give you good weeks. The talent is always there. The athlete is evident when you see him move around on the field, and it's just inconsistent. And I'm most encouraged by the fact that it did not seem like the Jets could really block the Bills. After the job they did keeping Fields relatively clean against Pittsburgh and T.J. Watt, you know, talking about their new tackles, right? The first-round pick from last year, Fashanu, and Membo from this year's draft, doing a great job on T.J. Watt, highest-graded offensive lineman, according to PFF, through week one. And they just could not handle the Bills up front. Joey Bosa looked, again, like a force to be reckoned with here. In, you know, it wasn't like there was gobs of snaps. The Jets didn't do much on offense, but when they did, the Bills were winning up front. And I want to take that away. I don't think that these tackles the Jets have suddenly are terrible. I think those are good players. I think the Bills just did a very good job up front, and, you know, went to school on what they needed to learn from how badly they got outplayed up front, especially at the tackle position on defense last week against Baltimore. You know, we knew the Jets weren't Baltimore, but again, style-wise, Baltimore light. Athletic running quarterback, good, very good to great running back, and what looks like a promising young offensive line, at least at the tackle positions, and they just could not hold up at all in this game. So, you know, credit to the Bills, but it was not quite a first-round knockout, but it was pretty close to that. I mean, they were the better team. They looked like the better team almost immediately, and they were.
And so two games up on the Jets, two games up on the Chiefs as well here in the early season. That's fun. New England at 1-1, Miami at 0-2, and Miami is in on Thursday night. Am I the only person that, when thinking about Miami coming in here now, thought of Ken Hitchcock with the Flyers when the 06-07 season started and the Sabres were just sort of rolling, I mean, to put it mildly, early in the season, and the Flyers, who the Sabres had exposed for looking old and past their good days the year before in the playoffs, showed up. And Buffalo won that game, I think, 10-1.
And everybody got fired.
And Hitchcock was, you know, he got the ride home, I guess, but that was it. He coached, I had to qualify it with Flyers, because he coached for a long time after that.
Yeah, he did.
In the league, and probably did a lot more winning
than
we have.
I did not myself think of that, but I like it as a comparison.
McDaniel had better, they'd better be on point. Like, 0-2, they just look so, I saw the end of that game after the Bills game was over here as postgame started, and just like McDaniel was always looking down at the field and no good energy at all with Miami. Mm-hmm. They could have won, but New England gets them, so that's next. The line went from 8.5 to 12.5 today, if it's even stopped.
Right.
Like, nobody is going to be on Miami here, which is a little bit, you know, unsettling in and of itself.
Sure, can be, yeah.
I mean, you talked about the Jets not being able to block the Bills when they had the ball. Also, I mean, that went both ways. Really, you have a game, an unusual game for Allen where he doesn't produce a touchdown either on his, you know, legs or with a touchdown pass. But Cook, I forgot to look. I mean, what did he even average yards before contact per play? Just like every play seemed like he was down the field before he even got touched. And I think fans think of the line as good, if not great. But I thought on the right side yesterday, Torrence and Spencer Brown, it was just a total mismatch. And Cook was able to, I mean, you didn't have any negative plays, right? Like he was just able to fall down for 5 yards on a running play. And then he broke the one, which was a great run.
Yep.
And when you can do that, no matter, this was, when you can do that, you'll almost never lose. Unless it goes, it's the same thing on the other sideline. But this was the game. So for all the years of, this goes back, you know, before Josh Allen. For all the years you watch football, and it just becomes more and more obvious that you have to have the elite quarterback to have a chance of winning. This was a game, this was a rare Bills game where I don't think it mattered who the quarterback was for them. Like it was just so easy up front. And the Jets, I mean, Fields threw for 27 yards. That's like one good play. Just nothing was happening on the other side at all.
I think Trubisky threw for more yards.
He did.
On one completion.
He did. 32. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was.
That was one where, like, you know, not that you're hoping for this at all, far from it, but you kind of want to see, like, what happens if the Bills get adversity. And, okay, well, here's Josh Allen running off the field, and that's not what we're used to. And Allen was like, after the game, I probably could have or should have just stayed down to give Trubisky a chance to warm up. But, you know, I'm bleeding, and
that's right.
Like,
yeah.
My instinct is to get to the sideline, get help. And so Trubisky goes right in, and it's like not even an easy throw.
Third and seven, you're right. Again, Sauce Gardner in coverage, and just laid it right out there.
To Palmer.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, I don't know how much I would say there really was. The story after week one was the comeback. But whatever restlessness there was in the air about the defense and the team overall, I mean, it's the Jets, and you can disparage them, but the Bills won so easily. It's like a few years ago when we were debating close games all the time. What are they supposed to do? Do you want them to take bad teams into close games so they can win more of their share of close games?
Be more battle-tested or something, right?
No, you don't want that. You want them to hammer them.
Right.
That's what the best teams would do.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here.
And they did that without, you know, Ed Oliver and Taron Johnson.
Right.
So it turns out, I mean, those are two of your best defenders. I mean, I don't want to, at least, you know, generally speaking, I don't know, rank them all, but like coming off week one, Oliver was their best defensive player in the win over Baltimore. And Johnson is a very valuable part of that defense. And yeah, they didn't even really miss a beat. The kid stepped in and did a good job. And the Jets just could not, they just couldn't handle them. They just could not do anything up front to get the ground game going. They could not protect Fields. It was, it was almost masterful and boring, kind of.
It was so boring.
It's just, we're better than you. And just, you know.
This was close to a non-event, this game. This was not a game we'll remember for anything. Except Allen's bloody nose.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's right. Yeah.
Maybe, but the Jets, I mean, just come on. It's a joke. Well, it's what we probably mostly expected so far in the AFC East. The Bills are minus 1,100 after two games to win the AFC East after being minus 250 before the season. And that made them the biggest favorite in the league for their division. We talked to Sam Paniadovich every Friday, and he'd always recommend the same bet. Put the Bills winning the AFC East with other things, just other kind of futures bets. You can feel like you might be getting good value from them. And now, minus 1,100, I mean, that's more than quadrupled. Right. And they almost lost the opener, and it's still like that. Miami's a no-show. The Jets looked like week one was a fluke. and what New England did was beat Miami. I still think New England is worth considering as like maybe good. Maybe the Raiders are good and they lose a close game to the Raiders. And I don't know, like they haven't been an embarrassment or anything so far, but their chances of winning the AFC East are very long. So you've got that. You've got the win over the Ravens, and Baltimore is 1-1, so a game and a half, if you will, back in, you know, the race for seedings. And now Kansas City is 0-2.
And the Bengals are 2-0, but they lost their quarterback.
That's right.
So we'll see. You know, the Browning certainly did well enough yesterday getting that win and had a winning record the last time he had to play extensively, which he obviously will have to be doing now. Burrow, the talk is right, 3 months at least. So you're talking about Thanksgiving, maybe.
Christmas.
For Burrow to be back. So, yeah, it's going to be a stretch there. And, yeah, the conference looks there for the taking, which is great news. You know, we're 2 weeks in and nobody's ahead of them.
I thought I'm you know, wanting to find what's interesting, you know, who might be, is it going to be just nobody? Teams don't usually waltz to the top seed. Is it going to be like that or what? And I thought Pittsburgh was interesting last week, pushed by the Jets, but you just get, you get twice as much information here. And maybe the Jets are that bad, and maybe Pittsburgh is just as bad. They lose to Seattle. Do you want to talk about the Colts at some point? They're the first team in NFL history to not have punted in their first two games, Indianapolis. And they steal that win. But they look like they might be interesting.
Yeah.
Houston is tonight. Jacksonville doesn't. Jacksonville looks – that's depressing, that one. New coach, but
– yeah.
Lawrence, I mean, how do you lose that game if you're Jacksonville without Burrow? You know, in the lead late, how much easier do you want it? Still, they can't figure out how to win that game.
Right. It's like the Bills knocking Rodgers out of that opener last year or 2 years ago and not finding a way to win the game.
How do you lose?
Right.
But at least that's not a team with sort of a track record of it. And this is, you know, this is.
Right.
Jacksonville is waiting for Trevor Lawrence to ascend and for them to like become one of the top teams or like at least the B level. And that didn't happen yesterday. I mean, is this going to be, how bad is this for the Bengals? I mean, it's probably bad. The Burrow gets hurt because they can't protect him. And that's not great for Browning. You know, I mean,
right.
He might be talented. I don't know. He's had, like you said, he kind of had moments, but if they can't protect him, then so what? What is there here? What is left here? Kansas City, I don't want to call Kansas City dead, but they don't look good, and they didn't look good last year either. And they still won all those games last year, right. But most of them were close, and you know what tends to happen there. And now, what do you know? They have two games, and they're both one-score losses.
Yeah, I mean, we'll after tonight, we'll be 2 weeks in. The Chargers and Raiders play tonight. One of them, you know, assuming we don't get a tie, is going to be 2-0, along with the Bengals and the Colts and the Bills. But, like, that is not who you're expecting at the top, you know. So it's early. Baltimore blowing out Cleveland like they did. Like, they looked very good in week one. They just, you know, fell apart at the end, and the Bills got them. So I still think that looks credible. But I'm not ready to buy Indianapolis at this point.
No.
You know, we'll see as it goes on here. You know, it's possible that the new coach whispers the right things in the quarterback's ear, and you know, Daniel Jones is late career, like third stop rejuvenation candidate. I mean, it can happen. You know, see Geno Smith, but I'm not ready to get there yet. So, I mean, everything 2 weeks in is just falling almost perfectly.
I think Houston is one. They're worth watching tonight. That's a pretty good test tonight with Tampa Bay at home. They have a poor offensive performance in week one, 9 points against the Rams, and maybe they'll just be another team that won't be able to figure it out. I don't know. But if they look good, they're still – they'll be – you know, Indianapolis is 2-0. But if Houston has a good night, they'll probably be that division's favorite, and, you know, maybe people will start talking them up again. This morning the Colts had passed them for best odds in the AFC South. Well, there it is. I mean, 30-10, nothing much to say. Other than there were concerns about the Bills' defense after week one, and those, I think, mostly went away. I thought this game, I said this a lot yesterday, not only were they superior athletically, and they got the lead, which makes life easier, but it looked like the Jets had nothing the Bills were not expecting. Like, there were, you have a quarterback like that, maybe you can sort of get them running the wrong way like Jackson does, and you can, you know, get going from that. But every time it seemed the Jets, you know, they ran anything, somebody was right there. It was the secondary. Bishop. Bishop is the only Bills player on defense by far to play every snap. Nobody else even played 80% of the snaps for them. I mean, they used backups
right
by the end of this game. But, you know, it reminded me of Sean McDermott talking about Bishop in the preseason, you know, trying to figure out what they've got. You stay out there.
Right.
And he had a couple of moments. And
he did.
He likes to mix it up, that guy. So you had that. You had Trey White, who, best sign there is he was healthy enough
right
to go, and you never thought about his being hurt again.
Right, and he made a play that's not a play that he's really known for at all, but like physical at the line of scrimmage on a run play, Benford in the backfield on whatever that was, an end around or a reverse, whatever. Like he's right there to sniff it out, and good thing he was. If you look back at the highlight of that, like they've got a convoy going down the right side, and there's only like a couple of Bills defenders over there. I mean, it didn't have to be a big play, but it almost, unless the Jets screwed it up, the guy stumbles or something, or some Bill, one of the couple Bills over there makes a huge play, it's probably a big game. But Benford sniffed it out and was in the right spot. So, they got plays from those guys. They got plays from depth, you know. Walker and Sanders did not get exposed in this game. They didn't play a ton, but the rotation was more like normal. You know, it was more, you know, the defensive ends, you know, three of them played the most, but the most I think was like 55%. If I remember what I looked at earlier today, Rousseau and Epinesa and Bosa were all around that kind of number. So they had to rely on the veterans. Again, the score helps a lot too. You know, you get into this game, into the back end of this game, and you can kind of do whatever you want, which is convenient when you got a game coming 4 days later.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.